Okay, the first time I came out of AFOG, I was lying on a floor in a store in Mexico City, covered head to toe with pastries, macaroons, pan dulces, every kind of pastry you can imagine. And there was a large woman screaming in Spanish something. I don't speak Spanish, but it was pretty obvious when she pointed to the window that I had, whatever I had done, I had landed in the window, and thus she was yelling, "You will pay for this." Well, my friend Marie, who's very fragile and very small, was standing by, and I turned to her and I said, "Well, what happened? What happened?" She said, "Well, you actually ran into a Mexican bus. I don't think it ran into you. I think you ran into it. And then you passed out, and I couldn't lift you up, so I asked somebody for help, and he brought you here, and we thought you were all right. But next thing we knew, you started stumbling towards the display window, and you passed out again, and were covered with pastries." So I decided after that, it shouldn't be a bull in a china shop. It should be Judith in a pastry shop. The next time was only 2 weeks later. And we were traveling in the southern part of Mexico where there are a lot of wonderful archaeological ruins. And we're staying at a hotel, and I struck up a conversation with a rather handsome man at the bar. And he said, "You know, what do you do? What do you do?" And he said, "Well, I'm an archaeologist, and I'm here from Carnegie University, and we're excavating a site nearby." Well, I kept flirting. The night went on, and he said, "Why don't you come with me tomorrow? I'm not doing an active dig, but you can see what we've done so far, and I'll show you around." So we did. It took about an hour and a half to get there in a Jeep. And no sooner had we gotten there, and he went over to talk to what must have been the security guard or night watchman, but I fainted again. And when I came to out of the fog, I was lying in this man's hammock, and he was holding a glass of water, and the archaeologist was gone. So when he finally came back, I said to myself, "Well, I guess I'm not wife material, because who wants a wife that's going to faint at every dig?" So after that, I didn't see him again. And what's more, I didn't pass out and come out of the fog for many, many years after that. But the next time I came out of the fog, I was in a straitjacket in a college infirmary. Obviously, in a straitjacket, I couldn't move. I could hardly move my head to see a doctor standing there. And he said, "Do you know why you're here?" And I said, "No, I really don't recall why I'm here. But the more important question is, why am I in a straitjacket?" And he said, "Well, apparently this is what your roommates told me. You were very despondent because you thought you had failed a music exam in your favorite course. So you started drinking the rum that you had brought back from a vacation in the Caribbean. And they told you to stop. You know, that you're not a very good drinker anyway, but rum is the worst. Apparently, I passed out, threw up all over myself. They had to call an ambulance, and when the ambulance came, I seemed to have woken up temporarily and fought them off so strenuously that they had to put me in the straitjacket to get me to the infirmary. The next time I came back, I came out of a fog. I was lying on a bench at Fillmore West when a concert was about to happen. And I was lying on this bench, and the people I came with weren't there, but there was another man who looked like a security guard, and he kept pointing to me as all the audience came by, and he said, "This is what happens when you take drugs. This is an example of somebody who OD'd." So I feebly raised my head and said, "What? I OD'd on wine at a French restaurant, period." So I finally was able to get up and go to the concert, which I don't remember at all. Well, that was the last time I actually came out of a fog that was figurative fog. The next time I didn't pass out, thank God, I came out of a literal fog on top of Mount Ashland. And I don't know if any of you have ever driven up to Ashland from San Francisco, But it's very, very flat for a long period of time. And then this huge mountain rises up. Well, I hate night driving. I hardly didn't come tonight. I just can't see, period, just under decent conditions. But I got to the top of the mountain, and a huge fog rolled in. And I, like the other story we heard, I couldn't see in front, I couldn't see in back, and I'm, thank God, I couldn't see over the side, which was the huge 8,000-foot drop down the mountain, or whatever it was. So I had to figure out what to do. If I sat there, first of all, there wasn't a cell phone in those days, so we'll rule out the cell phone solution. If I sat there, somebody would obviously, even with lights on, which you couldn't see through the fog, somebody might run into me, and it could be a large truck. There are a lot of trucks in that area. And if I went over to the other side of the road, which I didn't know where it was anyway, I could be then parked on the wrong side. So I just said to myself, you're going to have to do something. Well, at the time, I was an agnostic. I think I've progressed to an atheist now, but I wasn't. I don't think I can go further than that. Anyway, I was an agnostic, and my dad, who was in World War II, had always said over and over, there are no atheists in a foxhole. So I said to myself, well, there are no atheists on top of this mountain. And whether or not I believe in God, I am about to pray. And, you know, I asked for guidance, but I also made a pledge, something like the jazz musician, but he was selling his, it was Robert Johnson, he was selling his soul to the devil, but I was selling my soul to the world of social services. And I said, if I got through and got down that mountain, I vowed to work in social services, helping people financially, socially, medically, in any way I could. Got down, and I've worked in social services ever since.